Good morning. I want to thank NATRO and PHIN for the opportunity to speak here. I'm not only the county health officer for Kittitas County, but I'm a family doc in full-time practice, and we'll talk a little bit about the demographics of a small community like Ellensburg, Washington. The title of our project was Integrating Public Health into a Countywide Community Health Information Network. And this is probably perhaps the take-home slide, or although not necessarily the take-home point for our project. But in 2004, the medical providers in the county started to look at what we needed as an electronic health record. And at that time, I was not the county health officer. I've been the health officer for 3.5 years now. And we hired a consultant. At that time, there was one clinic using electronic health record. They were using ChartConnect, which is a fairly simple, very user-friendly from a primary care physician's perspective program. And we got this consortium together of all the primary care physicians in the county and said, you know, what do we really need? And after the course of about 2.5 years, we chose NextGen as our software program. It has some pluses and some minuses, and I'm not here to plug NextGen, just that that's who we ended up choosing. And at the time, our decision was to develop a community health solutions network, or an HIE. So we were a little ahead of the curve. And I went to NextGen's website this morning just to see if there was still an article about Kittitas County on their website. And if you go to NextGen and you type in Kittitas County or Health Information Exchange or Rio, what'll come up is a discussion about how we went ahead and chose what we did. And this little diagram is on there. And that's probably the piece in regards to public health that was the most important, is that even though I was not the public health officer at the time, our public health officer was from Seattle. She came over 2 days a month just to do the medical legal pieces that public health sometimes has to do. But we were still considered at the table. So we were put in at the table of this health information exchange from the very beginning. Initially, this diagram was all in black. I'll talk about the little pieces here. But in 2007, the health information exchange was started, both with primary care and the payers. So the practitioners have been using the health information exchange for 2 years plus, but all really in a silo. From a primary care physician standpoint, I'm still using the health information exchange just like I would paper records. I'm in my office, I'm seeing a patient, I'm not really communicating with very many others except going out to the payer portion and back. In 2008, the lab portion was included in here. So labs are dropping directly into the health information exchange and back to primary care. The specialist came on in 2008, just one orthopedic surgeon as the specialist portion. And the emergency room came on in 2008 with the ability to go into the health information exchange and look at medical records. They can't actually document in medical records or download data back into the health information exchange, but they can read only. So, currently, we have 25 primary care physicians using the Community Health Information Exchange. That's 6 clinics in our county. There are 4 primary care physicians that are not using electronic health records from 2 separate clinics. And then our student health clinic at Central Washington University also is still using paper. Some of this ability to do this, and I'll talk about this a little later, was enabled because of the size of our community. We have a critical access hospital designation, and there was some funding available for this at the time. And I'd like to talk a little bit later about funding. So this is Kittitas County. We have a population of just under 40,000. It's been pretty stable for years. We're 100 miles east of Seattle. 44% of our residents are not in the few cities. The major city, Ellensburg, Washington, has 16,000 residents. 9,000 of those are students. The physician-to-population ratio is 1 per 1,000, with a national average of 2.4. And this last year, we lost 4 primary care physicians. That's not included in this. So access to health is health care, especially primary health care, is a major public health concern. If you look at where the county is, the biggest problem we have is wintertime. We have 3 mountain passes that basically isolate us from Seattle, Wenatchee, or Yakima in the winter. So we're kind of a island amongst ourselves. So the aims of our project were to develop a public health notification module to facilitate health information exchange from the primary care providers, mostly reportable conditions. I did an informal survey of the primary care physicians to ask who knows what the reportable conditions are, and nobody was really able, you know, a few people are able to pull out chlamydia or syphilis or those kind of things, but they don't really know. And yesterday I was in a session where they discussed communicable disease notifying, and somebody said, well, you know, we get ours on the back of cocktail napkins from physicians on occasion and that kind of thing. And I think that's an exaggeration, but I can tell you in our county what has happened in the past is that physician would diagnose some disease. The health department would ultimately get a laboratory result. We would send the reporting form back to the physician, who then would ultimately, in their stack of things, fill it out. Probably a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later is when we would get the report. Our second aim was to develop EMR modules for public health services and investigations. I'll talk about a few of those. We have a very small health department. We have 17 employees in our health department. And we wanted to increase the knowledge of public health's role in communicable disease work. The application criteria, the top one was probably the most important. We wanted to make it easy for physicians to use the module and ultimately save them time and therefore save them money. You know, as a busy primary care physician, I know if I get asked to do things that take more time, I'm going to complain, I'm going to drag my feet, and I'm probably not going to do it. So we wanted to make it time-saving. We wanted it to be understandable. We didn't want to spend a whole lot of time trying to explain what we were doing. Because the HIE uses NextGen, we wanted to use standard NextGen format. So we wanted to use something that the physicians could look at and say, oh, I recognize this, and go on from there. We wanted to be relevant and important to a lot of health jurisdictions, and we wanted to link to and be consistent with local and state databases. So we got some input. We worked with NACHO to establish goals and timelines. We sent emails out to all 35 local health jurisdictions saying, please give us some input on this project. Like a lot of things, we got 2 emails back. People are busy. The 2 emails said, we think it's great, but we don't have time to do this. We reviewed the project with the State Department of Health staff. This fourth bullet is probably the most important thing about working with others. There's a network user group for our community. They meet the 3rd and the 4th Friday of each month. And we asked to be involved in that users group, and we were welcomed in. That was probably the biggest key, because those are the people that determine how the HIE is used, how funding is used, which projects get pushed forward, which ones get pushed back on the table. And so they were happy to have us involved. They were especially happy because we have a really good assessment team in the health department, and who are very interested in data. The people, most of the folks on the network users group are really interested in seeing patients and doing the work, but not really doing the work of what we could see as a benefit from the health information exchange. We surveyed medical providers at the beginning and we'll survey them at the end. This is our survey of the medical providers. We got a 65% response rate. The question was, do you support public health as a partner on the Community Health Solutions Network? The majority of people said yes or maybe. There was one person that said no. This was not divided up amongst people that used NextGen and didn't use NextGen. The other question was, do you feel like there's some benefit to the ability to send reportable conditions via the HIE? And the majority of the answers were somewhat important and very important. And then the bottom piece, is it important to receive immunization records? And almost everybody felt like that was important. We did start working on that particular project prior to this grant, and we have a statewide database, it's called Child Profile. That was our initial move into the network user group, saying we would like to connect Child Profile with the HIE. It has been a big problem. It's been difficult, it's been a lot of work. We want a bi-directional interface between Child Profile and NextGen. We want to make it easy for the providers. Currently, they have to enter the data. If they want to go in Child Profile, they have to enter the immunization data again, and they're not getting immunization data back from Child Profile yet. I spoke with the state Child Profile people yesterday, and it sounds like we're going to be coming on at least this week on a unidirectional, but that's not really good enough for us because we go out to the middle schools, give immunizations, HPV, Tdap, and we want that information to drop down into the HIE. So we're not done with that piece yet. So this was our product. It looks relatively simple. This is a screenshot of a lab order, and that I wish I had put a screenshot of just the lab template before the notifiable reportable condition button that's down here on the bottom. But I, as a physician, this patient that they put in the codes up here, actually, there was concern. We had a concern over a possible patient with the plague. He didn't turn out to have the plague, but those were some of the diagnoses that they put in for that patient. And we found that from a reportable condition standpoint, we couldn't drive this off of ICD-9 codes or the description of the complaints or the chief complaint. We ended up finding that we had to drive it off of lab orders, because otherwise, if you're looking for pertussis, I might diagnose it, put in cough as a diagnosis code. Somebody else might put in shortness of breath, somebody else might put in something else, and we at the health department would be getting too much data, and most of it not really important. So if the physician is worried about pertussis, they put in cough as the assessment, which is 786.2, well, there's no pertussis culture on this screen, but if you go to culture, then there's a pertussis culture that comes up there. As the physician orders the pertussis culture, up this reportable condition button will pop up. The red button will pop up onto the screen. We didn't want it to be there all the time, because then all of a sudden these clinicians are just saying, they're just blocking that out. Now, I, as the healthcare provider, might say, oh no, I didn't mean for that to be a reportable condition. I wasn't really thinking about pertussis. And they can ignore this button, hit submit, off goes their lab order for a throat culture, for example, and they're continuing to do their work. If I, as the physician, decide, yeah, I am interested in that, and they hit that reportable disease button, up comes the health department reportable disease conditions. These are the state of Washington reportable diseases as of current. Our staff actually checked all the boxes. It would have been nice if they had just checked, for example, pertussis. And then under patient comments, I might type in patient with 6 weeks of cough, high school student at Kittitas High School. We had a big pertussis outbreak this last year. We had 900 contacts, which is a lot in a small community like ours. And then they hit save and notify the health department, and that data goes directly to us at the health department. And it shows up as a task on the nurse, on the infectious disease nurse's computer that says, has a patient name, has a link to the chart, and that nurse is able to open up that chart, get demographics, get the diagnosis code, what physician ordered that code, and ultimately be able to get directly that patient's chart, that patient's chart note. One of the things that we did going back to that initial health information exchange, we purchased 32 licenses. The way that this health information exchange worked in our county, each practitioner had to have a license, had to have a next-gen license. Well, we've used all of our next-gen licenses, and we could purchase more, but we've paid for all those licenses. So the hospital, who's now the primary driver of this, the Board of Health all allowed me to use my license, my next-gen license, at the health department. So the health department now has a next-gen license without having to pay the licensing fee. They pay the monthly charge for use of that license, but didn't have to pay the big dollars up front. We also do a lot of overseas travel, so we developed a travel overseas module. A lot of our 9,000 students do travel overseas, so and we give travel immunizations. The immunization nurse will fill out this document, will then task that document back to the primary care provider in town. That document will show up linked in the physician's task box, and then will drop into their consultant tab on their EHR. The advantage to this, obviously, is the physician now knows that Aaron Summers has gone to Zaire for 6 weeks this summer and would be at risk of certain diseases that she might get there. I jumped now to pertussis. We developed a pertussis investigation module. Mostly we chose pertussis because that's what we saw this year. You know, having 900 case contacts was a lot of work for us, and so we figured now that we have an EHR, that the demographic data is already in the EHR in the cloud, that we were able to develop a module that closely resembles the state's electronic submission form. We also upgraded the immunization template that was a next-gen product. We updated that to make it more complete, make it more user-friendly. We presented this at a variety of places. We presented, obviously, at public health staff. We presented it to the hospital. We've talked to NextGen about this. We've presented it to Board of Health, the State Department of Health. We've talked to our surrounding local health jurisdictions about what we're doing. My boss presented at NACHO, and now I'm presenting here. The barriers we've had have been a lot. The main one is that EMR implementation and HI implementation is a very slow process. Along with that slow process, somebody has to take control of the HIE. You know, right now in our county, even though we have a support staff, that's this next little bullet here, the manager of NextGen, the EHR modules, she's overwhelmed. We haven't implemented yet our e-prescribing, although it's in there. We haven't implemented yet the public health portion, although now we have, only because of the grant. We've had difficulty getting people to think outside the box and look at really what the HIE, what the real advantage of our HIE is. So they really need a second or a third person to help run the HIE. Right now there's only one manager for this whole HIE. Lack of communication about true cost. This wasn't anybody's fault, but I can tell you that it costs lots and lots of money to do this. When this was started, going back to 2004, All of the primary care practitioners were in private practice, were self-employed. Now, implementation of an HIE and the electronic health record didn't put all these people out of business, but it played a part in now there's one clinic, they actually are part of the HIE, that are self-employed. Everybody else is now employed by the hospital or employed by the community health center. So the cost per physician to employ this was somewhere in the ballpark of about $100,000. As a primary care physician whose incomes go down every year, that's a big hit. And the hospital has basically taken on the cost of this along with the employment of all these physicians. So even for the health department, there were costs that we didn't have to pay for the license. We had to pay for the monthly charge, which we knew. But there were remote scanning licenses, internet charges, fax charges that we didn't really know about. We had a little bit of a blockade between our local support person. She wanted all the information to go through her before it went out to anybody else. That was unnecessary. She wanted the control, but again, getting back to the second bullet, she was overwhelmed. So we would try to get work done through her. She was overwhelmed, couldn't really do it. Again, we've had difficulty in connection with the state immunization registry. They've had a turnover of their employees at the state. So first we were working with one person, that person left due to budget cuts. Then we were working with somebody else who had to start all over again. Now the initial person is back. We're still struggling with the bi-directional approach. We could have connected through the office management software directly to the immunization registry, and that would have been less costly, but not really better for the offices. So we went to go through the EPM, and we're still struggling with that. We had all of our new modules in the test mode. This person number two, and decided we needed an upgrade. All those modules were lost in the upgrade. So it's important to keep a lot of communication. We could have never seen that. How did we at the health department know that when they upgraded it, all of our modules in test mode were going to disappear? But they did. And thus we've had some delayed implementation of the modules. Our next step, again, we're working this week to complete the link between NextGen and the state immunization registry. We're going to survey the providers. This is being presented at full staff next month to the providers, and we're going to implement the notification module. We still need to develop a toolkit for other local health jurisdictions to use. This is our project team. As I said, we have a very small department. This is about half, a third of our total department, and they really did the lion's share of the work. And again, I'd like to thank NACHO for their support. And that's the end. So I guess we'll take some questions. I think the important thing is if public health is in at the beginning, it's much easier to play a role and be a player than to be trying to push ourselves in at the end. I think the other thing that's been helpful for us, I mean, looking and listening in the last couple of days here, is that because we're an enclosed system, we were able, and nobody really had an EHR from the beginning, that now that we all have the EHR, we have less interoperability problems. Yes, sir.
This is for you and
Jeff. Jeff, why don't you come on here?
These systems do that with existing hospital systems. I mean, it's like, it seems like, you know, placing yet another burden upon already overburdened hospital staff.
You know, I mean, doesn't it make more sense to, like, have the, you know, starting with the AMR, the ambulance pickup, or the ED systems, and maybe even the regular admitting systems, you know, for people who come in the front door of the hospital to interact with these systems?
For the Wisconsin Health Information Exchange, they take any of the data that the hospitals currently have. Every, you know, 14 hospitals we've got, probably 10 different hospital systems. They send whatever data they can, they want. They just take it in any format and they kind of make it all work together. So the hospitals don't have to do anything different. We didn't want to ask them to do anything additional that they weren't doing before. And the same thing with the ICPs. The module that we have we're going to come up with is going to just, it's not going to ask them to do any more work than they're doing. It's actually going to probably make it do less. They're not hand filling out paper reports anymore. So we don't care what system they're using. They bring it to the exchange, and then from there we present the data in a grid that everybody can see in the same way.
To answer your question, from our county, we're still having some problems with other silos. You know, this is really a outpatient medical HIE going into here. We have a new hospital CEO. Perhaps he will be a little bit more on board to connection with all these things. But you know, the emergency room still has their EHR. The OB department has their EHR. Inpatient has their EHR. They haven't worked out the connectivity between those things. I believe they can all be done, but it's going to take some leadership as far as who's going to start dragging us through all of that. Yes.
I'm Dr. Larson. I'm Sue Salkowitz, and I'm here representing the American Immunization Registry Association, whose president actually is the child profile director, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested because many of the HIEs around the country have used the immunization information systems as kind of linchpins of their public health connectivity because they go into physicians' offices. So I wanted to ask you, in the next gen implementation that you're using, are you looking for an implementation that would have the immunization registry sort of pass through so that when you log into your next gen application, you would be able to call it up through your own system so that it's sort of transparent to you that the immunization registry is embedded in your?
Yes.
Is that the type of implementation? That's the gold standard that everybody is looking for, and it's only been implemented in one or two instances. So we would be very interested in the immunization registry world of tracking your progress on being able to implement that.
Thanks. Yeah, we're not giving up on our goal. We're dogging that one.
Should be the goal.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thanks. Hi, this is a question for Dr. Larson. I was wondering if your pertussis module had actually been implemented yet, and if so, how it was received by the physicians, and you know, what kind of response are you getting with it?
It has not been implemented yet. You know, the problem that we're going to, I think we view that as a tool to be used more at the health department than in the physicians' offices. As a practicing physician, I can tell you that at least with NextGen, I can pull down 200 templates of disease processes, and which can be really overwhelming. Now, should we get back to that problem we had in February of the 900 case contacts, what I foresee happening is us letting the clinicians know, please use this documentation module, it'll make your life easier, and then it would look at like their normal workflow. But I think on a regular day-to-day basis, as I see somebody in the clinic with a cough, I'm gonna use just their standard internal medicine module, and then it'll get pumped to the health department. Once we start seeing a certain number of those cases, then we would notify the healthcare providers to go ahead and please start using this because it'll make your life easier, it'll make our life easier.
I'd like to make a comment about something that you showed in one of your earlier slides. You pointed out that when you first got your software and implemented it in your community, that the first health information exchange function that was used was to link private providers with payers. Did I get that correctly? All right, so I'd like to make a comment about that, because I think public health may not be aware of the great potential of that link. So here's what's happening. Health Information Exchange, we're discussing it now and it's been discussed this morning, has great potential. We're just at the beginning of that. Public health is probably not going to realize great success from that in terms of doing its public health work for a minimum of 5 to 10 years. What are we going to do in the meantime? I would suggest that the public health community look into this link between private providers and getting paid. Right now, the principal need and use for health information exchange is to exchange money between payers and providers of care. And whether you participate as a provider in a formal health information exchange or not, almost every provider in the United States submits claims for reimbursement electronically now, and it's all standardized. What public health probably doesn't know is that all of those electronic health claims don't stay at the payers. They're de-identified and accumulated by a secondary market of healthcare claims accumulators. For example, I know of one, I've worked with one company that accumulates healthcare claims. They get electronic transmissions from healthcare, from 300,000 healthcare providers every day and 30,000 physicians. What's in a healthcare claim? All the stuff that public health needs to know. The diagnoses, the procedures, the demographics, and a description of the provider and the location. So here is this huge ocean of electronic information generated right now by Health Information Exchange that is perhaps invisible to public health and could potentially be very, very useful in the H1N1 pandemic, just an example, or to use it every day.
Yeah, I think we see that, and our assessment folks, we actually have two assessment coordinators at the health department. They see this as really an opportunity to gather data, work on chronic disease management, work on communicable disease management, and you know, I think in our community, they're going to look to public health to do that, to manage that data.
For anyone who's interested, I fortunately have access to a lot of this information, and I have some H1N1 information I'd be glad to share with anybody in the group who would like to stay after.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Joel Greenspan.
Even the military, which doesn't pay for services, has found that diagnosis codes on their claims are typically poor representations of what actually has happened. So you've got to remember that the payment information is solely for the purpose of payment, and docs like to get paid. So they'll put down whatever they need to get paid. So it's you need to be cautious about using claims payment information for a different purpose than it was intended.
On your provider survey, you had roughly a quarter of the people responding who, this one, do you support public health as a partner on the Community Health Solution Network? And roughly a quarter of the people either were questioning it, maybe, or didn't. Do you have analysis on that? Was it administrative burden? Was it age-related? I mean, do you know what that was about, why they didn't want you at the table?
You know, I'm not absolutely sure, because we really didn't dive down into that data. I would venture to, guess that one of those respondents is very concerned about patient privacy, and that provider will never get on board with sharing data from her office with anyone. She doesn't do child profile. I mean, she doesn't do electronic health records. And I'm not sure about the other, the reddish box.
Those are the people who play golf
with. I guess.
Yeah. I promised Jeff I was going to heckle him on this presentation here. So it was my understanding that one of the carrots that was dangled in front of the hospitals with the WE project was that by having access to this information, they would be able to reduce or eliminate unnecessary or repeated tests. The scenario being grandma goes into one ED on Tuesday with chest pains and goes into another one on Thursday with the exact same symptoms. Has that panned out?
Yes, it has. Actually, the ED physicians are real pleased with the whole linking project for that reason, is they have been able to not to stop doing some duplicate tests, you know, ordering a test, because they just had it at a different hospital 3 days ago. So they're seeing that wasn't, we knew that would be an additional benefit. It wasn't part of the initial focus, but it's certainly been well received and clearly documented that, and people that were shopping for narcotics, they also show up, you know, everybody, you can't hide now, everybody can see everybody else's stuff. So yeah, it's been very good, and that's why the physicians have been pushing to continue it. If I understand the question, it's if we factored in the time of day for ED visits, whether or not that affected show rates. The WE information is all real-time data. I mean, it's updated like every 2 minutes, so all those, every single visit is counted against whether they referred and if they showed up for their appointment or not. So yeah, it didn't matter what time they came to the ED. Front here.
Records so they can see what medications they got from other physicians or what other tests they received. I mean, because you've got to help them see the financial benefit to their practice to being a part of this.
Right. Right now, the way that works is that all of the patients that have ever been seen in the county are all in the network. So if I've been seen at one office and I go to another office, they can go up to the health information exchange, they can look at my demographic data, medications, history, allergies, pharmacy use. They can't actually, without access to that record, they can't actually look at my visit history. But there's a certain amount of data. Immunizations are in there, for example. So if you wanted to know if I was being admitted to the hospital for pneumonia, whether I'd gotten a pneumococcal vaccine, that would be in there. But without access, granted access, that data is not able to be seen. Now, the emergency room can see all that data, and hopefully the health department will be able to see all that data, but that's not available yet.
So not available yet, or is it something that the physicians don't want to share with one another?
No, I think especially now that there's less of that, these are my patients. You know, we're still all in our own individual silos from a clinician standpoint, but we're now all employed by someone else. I can give you an example of what we're doing with H1N1. We're planning on a centralized flu clinic for all of the county patients, which will use the HIE. And nobody's saying, no, I don't want those, I don't want Dr. Larson to go to the flu clinic, I want him still to come to my office. So the physicians are letting go a little bit of that. I think as we, that'll be one of the benefits of the H1N1 outbreak, is that once we do that thing, the physicians will see the value of that and will not be saying as much, I don't want my patient to go somewhere else.
This is just a curious question, particularly in connection with H1N1, but do either of you include pharmacies or pharmacists in your network, as increasingly pharmacists are getting into the immunization administration business, at least for patients over 18?
Not yet, we don't. Right now it's just ED visits. They're planning on adding inpatient and pharmacy information from the hospital pharmacy, probably in the next year or so, whenever they can get it, the agreements worked out and such. So we are looking at doing that. It's just not in place yet.
And we're using pharmacy, at least initially, we'll be using pharmacies as e-prescribers. So we'll be electronic prescribing to the pharmacists. We haven't gotten them on board in regards to, you know, when you get your influenza vaccine at Safeway, we haven't gotten them on board even to use child profile yet. They still send us a fax that says, Dr. Larson got his flu shot today, and then we have to manually enter that. But that's the goal. All those pharmacies are signing up as providers for the H1N1 vaccine, so it gives us a tool to say, okay, we'll give you this if you do this.
Thank you. Could you share with me if you provide any type of opportunities for patients to either opt out or not participate? And also another part of this question is, could you explain in a little bit more detail about the sustainability of both of your programs?
Right now, there's no patient opt-out that I'm aware of. It's primarily a tool for the ED physicians to get people who don't have medical homes referred someplace so they're not coming to the ED for their primary care, and also to hopefully reduce the number of unnecessary tests. So I'm not even sure, I wasn't in the discussion when the exchange was set up, anything about patients opting out, but as far as public health has the certain, you know, need to see infectious disease and things like that, so that's not an issue from that perspective. And then as far as sustainability, it's really the five healthcare systems in the partnership that did the initial funding and 2 months ago increased it or sustained it for the next year, because they were getting such positive feedback from the ED physicians of how valuable it was, and probably, you know, could cite some money that they were saving from not doing all these unnecessary tests. But it's really been those healthcare systems that have been the driver for our information exchange at this point. Our state of Wisconsin is looking at a statewide information exchange. They're just in the early planning stages, but they haven't really talked about funding for that, how that would be funded. But that's always a big concern.
And for us, there's no patient opt-out. Actually, currently, there are no providers in our county accepting new patients. So I guess your opt-out would be to drive 45 minutes to another county to be seen. That would be the opt-out as far as the health information exchange. Now the other piece, the sustainability, I think because in 2004 we set this up as our EHR, that it would be financially much more costly to the hospital as a whole, who's actually driving this currently, to say we're going to abandon this and do everything else, do something another way. Now that said, we have a community health center that we brought in hopes to address some of the access to healthcare problems. They're actually based in Yakima. They're a community health center based in Yakima, put a satellite up in our clinic, or in our community. In Yakima, they're using Chart Connect. Well, they're getting a big push by their providers in Ellensburg to go back to Chart Connect because it's easier. It's just like it used to be, where you'd dictate into a dictaphone and up your notes would come. And so we have to push pretty hard for that particular clinic to not pull out and do something else.
Does the information actually get there eventually, though? I mean, even with the people who opt, with providers and clinics, get to your depression stage eventually?
Yes, that you don't have to have, you can have whatever system you want in another county, and that can drop that data into our, into the HIE in Ellensburg.
Well, my question is about the hospitals in your area who are not part of your system. If they want to use it, do you charge them a certain fee to use it?
If someone wanted to become a, wanted to get a next-gen license for doing their electronic health records, they'd have to buy a license from NextGen to have their EHR. Now, if you were an internist in Yakima and you wanted to just access data to that, then there is no charge to do that.
Do you have policies available or in place that indicate that charge or how you're sharing information with those other hospitals?
We haven't had anybody who said that they wanted yet to purchase a license to use NextGen as a EHR. The policies are in place for, and procedures are in place for other, for the gastroenterologist in Yakima to access demographic data and drop data down into the HIE. The big problem we have is that, again, getting back to our administrator being too busy to actually use the functionality of our HIE. The issues are there, the opportunities are there, and it's just like the e-prescribing bit, all it really takes is somebody to take ownership of that particular piece and turn it on. Now, the other interesting thing that shows how important HIEs are becoming, I went to the NextGen website this morning and looking up our county, and I saw that there's a NextGen webinar on the 15th this month entitled How to Achieve Community Interoperability, Learn from the Voices of Experience, Hear a Real World Success Story from Kittitas Valley Community Hospital. I didn't even know they were doing that until this morning when I happened to look at the website.
Okay, do we have any other questions?
IE. Nothing's been said on our end about mandated. It's all voluntary. But I think they started with maybe 10 or 11. So they got a pretty big buy-in from the beginning from the five healthcare systems, and they just finished putting the last couple ones on beginning of this year, I believe. So now everybody's participating. I guess they didn't want to feel left out then. If everybody else was getting it, you know, I want some of that too.
Yeah, nothing from our end.
Anyone else? Going once? All right. Oh, was that a question? No. Okay. All right. Well, thank you all very much for coming, and thanks very much to our presenters for this great presentation today.